Well, good morning. It's morning somewhere. It's 2:32 p.m. here in Greeley, Colorado. Sun's out. It's breezy. I'm hoping getting down here in the neighborhood, I won't have quite so much chill wind nipping at my fingers. So, yeah. Took me a while, but I finally figured out how to upload it yesterday. How to make the blog post to go along with it, finally. Took a little bit. You know, do it for 6 or 7 months, 8 months. You kind of forget how it goes. The last one, I think, was June 21st, 2022. And now yesterday, and now today, and with any luck tomorrow, and the day after, and yeah, we'll see how it works out. The back doesn't like me this morning, this afternoon, today. Been complaining all day. Arthritis. And my grandma used to say, them rightus boys and Arthur's the worst of the lot. At least I know what causes it. Part of it's arthritis. Part of it is I don't have enough upper body strength still. We'll get there. One day at a time. I have a really strong today focus. Every day I get up, it's today. It's funny how that works. I don't know if you've noticed it or not, but every single day you wake up in the morning, it's always today. It's never tomorrow. It's never yesterday. It's always today. What is up with that? But the beauty of it is, it lets me just focus on one thing at a time. And while having ADHD makes it sound like I need to focus on a bunch of things all at once, that's actually the problem with ADHD. You focus on everything all at once, or try to, and of course focus on nothing. That's the way it goes. I did remember to bring a water bottle with me today. It's a small one. But if I get dry, then I can deal with it. We had a lot of crows around here this afternoon. Pardon me if I keep calling it morning. It's supposed to be morning when I'm walking. And I would have walked this morning if I hadn't had to wait for a phone call that was supposed to come this morning and didn't come until after I sat down to have my lunch. And then kept me on the phone for over an hour. Some geese going over. I was not amused. Just thought I'd share that. All right, I'm gonna try to stick this phone in my pocket and hope I don't shut it off in the meantime. Guys, I need to get a little soup here. I don't need much, but I do need a little. That makes it so much nicer. Perhaps you can hear the crows. I'm just supposing. They're pretty loud. The one's in the tree right above my head. Yeah, I think it's still working. Okay. Anyway. What do I want to talk about today? I don't know. I don't have anything to talk about today. I got it all in my system yesterday. Talked about the treatment. Talked about being sick. Talked about losing weight. Talked about being miserable. We've taken care of that. That's a new Chevy truck that looks kind of retro. Interesting. Bold choice, as they say. So I finished the backfill for the story Bible for Dock Knight Station this morning while I was waiting for the phone call that didn't come. I might be salty about that. I got up early. I had a big jump on the day. I was going to get way ahead, and then I was going to be able to get in the walk before noon, and then play with my dinosaurs all afternoon, and here I am. Afternoon's half over. I'm still walking. It's not fair, I tell you, it's not fair. Honk, 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 honk. There he is. And I'm working on the first Ishmael book. I also had an epiphany about the cat. I think I mentioned that yesterday. Let's see how it works out. I like the way the new book is coming together. I got into a discussion online the other day about that feeling, that uncomfortable feeling about a story that you get when a character isn't doing what the character needs to do or would do, an uncharacteristic action on the part of a character. And it was a little confusing because the character that was acting up was not Ishmael or Pip or Natalia or any of that. It was Alice Chagoun. And when I figured out, the fix is actually pretty easy. The fix is not going to take a great deal. I will have to write a few new words, but I'm also purging a whole bunch. There's a lot of stuff that I put in that didn't need to happen. There's a lot of meandering. I've chopped up most of the meander. At this point, I don't know if the book is going to make 100,000 words, but it's like 99,000. By the time I add in the new stuff and put in a decent denouement, it will be all right. It's still longer than the first three. The first three shares. Got into a long discussion about short stories, novellas, with John Ward. Speaking of Ward, Blaze Ward, no relation to John as far as I know, who does a lot of science fiction. The science officer is where I know him from, but there's another series that people, I think it was his earlier book, people kept recommending to me, and it's like, maybe. Samples didn't grab me. But I got a long conversation with John Ward about short stories. He's got a bug in his ear about why magazines flourished in the 50s and 60s and then started dying in the 70s and 80s and have been largely moribund, with some exceptions. Like anything, there's once the supplier pool shrinks to a certain level, it meets its demand. And at the moment, the demand for short stories just isn't there. That's why so many of the zines, A, can't pay their contributors, B, can't pay for production, and wind up, oh my God, the monk pole has broken off. I just came around the corner. It's missing. Somebody must have driven through it. Anyway, why they're going to crowdsourcing to fund the year, and then after they funded the year, then they put the magazine together, and where that relates back to Blaise Ward is that he puts out a quarterly magazine, and it's BSQ, I forget the name. Yep, so we drove right through it. Bang. Well, all right, I just hit the other one. Broke it right off. Come on up, stay with me. Monk post. City will replace it, I'm sure. And part of the conversation involved Blaise in terms of how he goes about funding crowdsourcing a year's worth of production and uses profit share with the contributors, where he splits, I think the split was like 70% of the revenue gets split among however many contributors there are on some sort of basis. I don't know what it is. And John thinks that I should write a column for them about indie science fiction. And I'm like, why would I do that? Why would I do that? Why would I take time and attention away from trying to write a novel? Big gaggle of geese here. I love that sound. And the truth of the matter is that I probably could take time away from playing with my dinosaurs and do something else. John wants me to write short stories. And of course, I don't like to read short stories, so I don't like to write them. But there's a case to be made that it is, in fact, a different audience, in addition to being a different skill set and a different form. While there's some overlap in the population known as readers, pardon me, I had to stop to take a drink. Ah, there. While there is some overlap, the number of periodical short story readers is considerably smaller than the number of people who will read a novel. And looking at it strictly from a marketing perspective, I have to ask, is it worth my time Or is it, am I just better off playing? Taking the hour that I would spend, because I would do something radical like allocate an hour to writing a short story or writing an article or something. I actually did allocate time outside of my normal writing to write essays about independent publishing, publishing in general, marketing, trying to explain concepts like the long tail to people who have a completely different view, largely based on an interpretation of the statistical distribution called long tail, or the shape of a distribution called long tail. It's not specifically a long tail distribution. I think it's called a power law curve or something like that, to differentiate it from a normal distribution. But I digress, as they say. But apparently there was a book called The Long Tail. And it said, it made a lot of assertions about the long tail and how it was going to change everything, and there'd be no more blockbusters, and all of it was just so much stupid. I never saw the book. It's probably just as well, or I'm likely to be still a little salty over the book. But I wrote a lot about the long tail and how, particularly for writers, the issue with the long tail is, where do you fall in the long tail? Because unless you're one of the big names, unless you're one of the people who has hot and cold running agents, that has Orbit or Brown and Company or Hachette or one of those on speed dial, The long tail is where you are in terms of how much you earn based on the derived value of the revenue from your writing, taken in total for over a year, or even over a day. Over a day it may be zero, it puts you way on the end. But, you know, basically over a year, how much would you get over a year? And for traditionally published authors, which is where a lot of the conversation started because of a survey in Britain bemoaning this condition or the state of the median amount of earnings for authors, for writers. A study that was fraught with peril. It was basically pointless. It was so badly flawed. I don't know that you can actually draw any conclusions about it, other than the logical conclusion that the median earning for an author, for a writer in the UK, is lower than it was 10 years ago. And that's probably true. The question is, how much lower? And how much of it is error brought in by some really questionable sampling? The biggest issue was that when they started doing the survey, I think 2014 was the earliest one, self-publishing really hadn't taken off yet. It wasn't really a factor. In this most current survey, 2022, ACLS, whatever the hell that is, the largest reported population of writers was academics. Academic writing. Most of their writing was academic. And there is, with a possible exception of poets, I can't think of any writer who would earn less than that. And I think it's probably on par, because I suspect that while poets may earn a buck or two, academics might earn 10. But for the most part, they're forced to publish in journals that don't pay in order to keep their jobs. It's called publish or perish in academe. So the biggest contributor to the median in the sample, or the worst contributor, depending on your point of view, would have been the academics who make no money. The next group, oddly, was self-published authors. And the difficulty with that is that, why would a self-published author participate in this survey done by a traditionally published organization, or an organization aimed at traditionally published authors? The big incentive is to sort of an incentive to show how little you make. I know a lot of authors who are, you know, haven't sold a book this year, or, you know, maybe got into the middle double digits in terms of sales. So the survey itself is kind of bogus, but assuming it is smaller, how do you solve it? And the answer is, you have to raise the median, which means you have to pay authors more. But the trick is, you can't just pay the writers who are above median, which are the people who already are doing pretty well by comparison to the other half. Speaking of how the other half lives, you can't just pay them more, because it just moves them around above the median. It doesn't change the median. You have to have the people who don't have very many sales get more money. And how do you do that if nobody buying their books? It's sort of like, we can raise the median, but we have to get self-published authors to sell more books. It doesn't matter if academics sell more, because what they sell them for is zero to begin with. So that's kind of pointless. But if the people who are earning double digits suddenly get into triple digits, or even four digits, now we can do something. 23 minutes, 24 minutes. Anyway. Yeah. I think this is going to work. This walking and talking thing. Man, it's windy. But it's a beautiful day. And I'm glad I took the walk. And I'm glad I had a chance to talk with you. But I am at the back gate. Tomorrow, well, it's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.